Hey, I'm Alan McGuire.
I'm Andrea Cleary.
And this is Juvenalia, a podcast where we talk to an interesting person about a bit of pop culture that was important to them when they were young. Our guest today is the host of What Makes a Song Stink. He's a musician, YouTuber, Pat Finnerty. Welcome to the show.
How's it going? Thanks for having me.
We are delighted to have you. You've picked an absolute banger of a topic. I'm very familiar with it. Andrea, I think less so. It's more of a recent thing into your life.
So this is the second podcast I've ever done about this. So it seems like I'm somewhat of an expert, actually. But the last podcast I did was Friends of the Show, The Last One to See, because I was the last one to see in the world Spinal Tap. This was maybe like a year and a half ago. So I came to it late in life, but love it very much. And it's come to mean a lot to me since then. But Pat, it's your topic, so it means a lot to you. How did you tell us the story?
Well, I mean, when you asked if I would come on, and then I saw what I had to think of something, and I was just like, well, the Beatles, I'm sure you've done that like 40 times. And I'm thinking about all these other things. And then I was just like, I'm sure someone's done Spinal Tap. I mean, I was like, am I really going to talk more about Spinal Tap? But I love, you know, Spinal Tap to me was one of the most important things that ever happened in my life. I have a vivid memory of seeing it for the first time and then quoting it into oblivion. But I still do, like, almost every day, you know, not like the big ones, like up to 11 and shit like that. But like, you know, David, Smell the Glove is here. But like, you know, it's like None More Black. It doesn't matter like what. Every day, it seems like it could fit in at some point. So, and it kind of, for me, was the marriage of what I ended up kind of doing for my old, right now, like for my life, which is a kind of a marriage between music and comedy. So,
Every time I see a stuffed olive, I'll think of him being like, who's in here? No one. Who's in here? Oh, it's the little guy.
Exhibit A. I mean, look at this one. You know, you fold it, you know. So it's just like every single one of those kind of there's very few movies for me that like everything is as good as everything else in it. Like Big Lebowski's kind of up there. That was another one. But I was just like, these are the ones that I don't know. You're almost tired of how much you quote them, but at the same time, I felt like for your podcast, I was just like, no, this is kind of exactly. It was the first thing that popped up, minus the Beatles. But
the reason why I hadn't seen it until my 30s was precisely how fucking quotable the film is and how many people had quoted it at me for so many, like particularly in my teenage years and then for so many years. And I just really dug my heels in and was like, I'm so sick of hearing all these jokes from everybody. I'm not going to watch it. And I did myself such a disservice by refusing to watch it because I was like, this movie's so dumb. Sounds like it's for dumb boys. And was just like really bitter about that because it was only ever men talking about it. And I was like, oh, stupid dumb boy movie. And then I watched it and I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. Has everyone seen Spinal Tap? Do you know this movie, Spinal Tap? It's really good. But tell us about the first time you watched it. What was that? What was that experience? What do you remember?
My cousin Mike and I watched it together. I think we were probably like 12 or 13. And my cousin Mike's older brothers had it. So my older cousins had it. And we were able to, you know, steal the living room that night from them. They were probably like 15 or 16 and they just didn't want anything to do with us. And we were kind of the youngest in our family. We were the youngest. There were tons of cousins, but we were the youngest. So we got it and we were able to just watch it by ourselves. And we were already starting to play guitar and stuff like that and way into music. We didn't get half of the jokes, I'm sure, but the ones that we did, it was kind of like one of those things, you know, when you're watching, You watch something as an adult that you were watching as a kid and you got certain jokes, but you didn't get the other ones. And you're like, wait a second. So like you're watching The Simpsons and I was just like way into Bart saying like cowabunga man. But then you realize that Mo, you know, was trying to kill himself in the, you know, put no funeral on the pack as he's climbing into an oven. I mean, that's the best. So it's just like that kind of stuff. And then as I watched it throughout my teenage years, I was starting to get more of the jokes and realizing that Derek Smalls had been cupping the groupie's chest area while they came in, and he's just chilling there, hanging out onto that. And it's just like all of these little things. So, but in the beginning, I mean, yeah, it was, this one goes to 11 and that kind of stuff. But then as you got a little older, you realize that, you know, you can't play the fucking guitar because it's your fucking wife. And then she's not my wife, whatever fuck she is. And then like, whatever fuck she is. I mean, that's one of the best lines that's ever been written. Can't play the guitar. It's your fucking wife. It's your fucking wife. She's not my fucking wife. Whatever fuck she is. So it's like those things, you know, and then now it's just in daily conversation. If someone will be like, you know, have you talked to your girlfriend, whatever fuck she is, or like, I don't know, you know, so that's just become what's the status of your relationship, whatever fuck she is.
Whatever fuck she is.
Have you heard they're together now or whatever fuck they are? Yeah, I remember like the lights were dim and we were watching it, and you know, Derek Smalls was stuck in the thing during Rock and Roll Creation and he couldn't get out of it. And Stonehenge hits, and it's just like, it's just nobody knew what they were or what they were doing. And I remember as a 12-year-old, me and my cousin, we flipped out like over nobody knew who they were or what they were doing, and just knew
but
that
their
that
legacy,
was yeah, no one knew what they were doing, like. And like, we laughed so hard at that line. And that was a big, and then we started making our own little things on a VHS camcorder that I got for Christmas, like a year later or something like that. And we started doing our own probably ripoffs of Spinal Tap, and we were speaking in the British accent and all that shit. But yeah, it was, and started writing our own joke songs. So like, it was kind of like Ween before I ever heard Ween. You know, it turned into a musical thing for me too. It was very formative as far as that goes, where we could start to write our own like kind of like parody songs and joke songs and stuff like that. And that's kind of what I do still. So it's pretty heavy for me.
I wonder if I'd seen it at 12 because I was dumb. If I would have just got that it was like that the songs were a joke or that anything was a joke, I probably would have just thought they were really cool rock stars, to be honest.
We might have. I mean, I don't even
and
remember.
I still kind of think they are
really
cool rock stars, don't get me wrong. But
well, the thing is that the songs are really good.
They're really good
songs. And that's kind of another template. Like whenever I do a parody song, I'm not trying to compare myself or blow myself and say that I'm you know, whatever, but like whenever I do a joke song, I really, you got to make sure it's only funny if it's actually kind of good, you know what I mean? So like when you hear Stonehenge or you hear like, you know, I look to the stars and the answer is clear, you know, like that whole bridge in Rock and Roll Creation, and then there's a bass part that goes doo 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 doo.
It's a really solid bass line.
It's a great like, bass.
Yeah, it really is.
And then it goes do 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 do. There's like a prog kind of part that happens, and all of these little parts in all of the songs. I mean, Hellhole, you know, the walls are dirty, the mattress stinks. This ain't no place to be a man. Like this ain't no place to be a man. You know, sex form rips. Like
just hearing a man like earnestly say working on a sex farm. That's an eternal joke that will never not be funny.
Trying to raise some hard love. Now my pitchfork.
Even you know? how can I leave this behind in Big Bottom
behind.
Is my favorite line in any of the songs. Like the reason why I decided to watch the film was because my boyfriend was singing Big Bottom at me one day and I was like, what the fuck? Fuck are you? I mean, come on.
Yeah, you were on the other side of that.
I was like, what the fuck are you singing? Like, what is this? What is this music? Then he showed me the clip and I was like, this is what Spinal Tap is. This is really fucking funny. This is amazing.
Yeah.
And the song is great. But even the song, is it All the Way Home when they're just singing it? They're like,
all
it was
the
their
way
first
home.
Song.
Yeah.
And they're just singing it together in that like little cafe. And I'm like, oh, I love that song. I love when they were the Beatles.
GSM was great. GSM. And then the Flower People. Flower People
Flower
is incredible.
People.
But what I think back to Big Bottom, though, what's funnier to me than the, you know, the lyrics of that song is that they're all playing bass. I mean, that's the funniest part about it. I'm like, wait a second, they're all playing bass. And I remember that too, like first time, like Mike and I just looking at each other, like, wait a second, is Nigel playing a bass there? Yeah. Is Hubbins playing? They're all playing bass.
Hang on a minute.
Big bottom. And I mean, the amount of jokes that are layered into that are amazing.
It's stunning.
Like as a baby musician, there's a lot to spot in there. Like, you know, to make you feel like it's not reference humor, but like, as like a little, like I was like 14 when I saw it, I think I'm playing guitar like a year or two. And I was, when you get the bass joke, or you get like, oh, this is like Tonight I'm Gonna Rock Tonight is Kiss. And you're like,
yeah.
Oh, I feel a little bit smart, but like,
yeah,
it's still like, I don't need to listen to Kiss ever, because I was listening Tonight I'm Gonna Rock Tonight instead.
Yeah, it's called Tonight I'm Gonna Rock You Tonight. I mean, yeah. You throw it tonight twice. And that song rules. I mean, that is just like, but that shitty riff that's just so hilarious but so awesome at the same time. The and then I just so I mean, that was like the big hit. We used to play that all the time. You know, Little Girl, It's a Great Big World, but there's only one of me. You can't touch because I cost too much. You know, I mean, every line of every song is great. There really isn't a bad song. I mean, you get to listen to the Flower People. That's amazing. And it does that sitar solo at the end where Harry Shearer is just staring up at the thing. And I mean,
it's really beautiful.
It is.
It's like a beautiful moment in the film, you know, just to look at even.
Yeah.
A lot of times when they're on stage, they do look very beautiful. Like they're such convincing rock stars. Like they're cheesy as fuck and all of this, but like, the difference between when they're on stage, I'm like, oh, I believe this band wholeheartedly that they, and it helps that they're good musicians and the songs are good and the solos are good and everyone's playing. And like, so even when, is it not Nigel is playing, he's like, oh, I'm known for my solos. He's like playing one guitar with his foot, and then he just tunes the violin before he starts playing it. Like, it's just stuff like that I'm just like, that's what's funny here, do you know?
Yeah, and I think it's important to bring up the fact that it's a slippery slope when you're talking about music and comedy. I mean, it's a real slippery slope. Like, you gotta watch out. There's bare naked ladies out there, you know? Like, you gotta be careful. You can't just go into it. And for me, a person that's always, even when I was just in a band, I was always kind of like, I would sneak off to an open mic every now and then, not tell anybody. I would go to like a comedy open mic. I'm like, I want to try this. But I wouldn't tell any of my friends, and I would bring my guitar and I would just like riff on stuff and everything like that. But I'm like, I'm a guitar comedy guy. Like, those are tough. Those are tough sometimes. You got to be able to separate it a little bit. And there is. There's a way to do it correctly, I believe. And it's Spinal Tap. I mean, kind of like shows you way of how to do it. I mean, there's just so many layered jokes, and like, they obviously knew how stupid rock and roll is, but how much it rules at the same time. And that's kind of everything that I do on my YouTube channel.
Perfect encapsulation of it.
This is so stupid. I mean, how much I've spent my life talking about the sound of a hi-hat, you know, but it's the most important thing to me, you know? So it's just kind
of asking the important questions, like the Travis Bowl, you know. You really need to believe in the question you're asking to dedicate that video to that question, and
good
it
Lord.
Works.
Yeah, I'm still shaking that off. That thing put me through hell. Do you know how many times in the Kravitz Bowl, like, I realized that, oh my God, I forgot to say this as the commentator. I got to put the wig back on, and I got to put the suit back on and the tie. And I'm like, oh my God, no, the ref's got to say this. I got to put the ref shirt back on. I'm like, oh God, I got to wait a second. No, now I'm putting this, you know, the amount of that back and forth.
The admin insane. Of that. You know, the Kravitz Bowl was the first video of yours I'd seen. I was just coming home from, I was just coming home from a weekend away. My boyfriend had discovered you over the weekend and binged all your videos up to the Kravitz Bowl, which is when I come home, about halfway through the video. there's Hoffman's flying, you're in a wig, I have no fucking clue. I'm like, what the fuck are you watching? And he's like, oh, just go back to the start of the video. So I go back to the start of the video, and he was like, actually, just go back to his first video, and yeah, we'll just work on this context here. But it was like, I walked in and I was like, what the fuck is this? But it was great.
There's Hoffman's,
don't get me wrong,
flying.
There's, yeah, Hoffman's like, fucking flying.
People
what
try
is this?
To, people ask me all the time. Like, I see people trying to explain it. Somebody sent me or tweeted at me, or X'd, sorry, X'd at me, that they were trying to tell somebody about what I do. And they were just like, okay. Because a lot of people have seen my recent episode and they'll say, like, this is my first episode. I'm like, how? How did you make it through an hour of this and not knowing, you know, who Jack Hoffman is or who the Blanche DeGaulle guy
is? The Beato thing or whatever.
Beato thing or why am I shooting Beatos out of guns? And what does any of this mean? And who are my parents? And why all of this stuff? And they were like, yeah, but I loved it. I was like, okay. But like someone was like, every time I tell someone to check out, I sent them your new video. And by the way, it's an hour. Oh, and also you actually want to watch the first 7 episodes that are all worth a half an hour each and make sure that you watch all of those before you. So I'm like, yeah, good luck. I don't know how people are coming cold on this one, but they are. So that's cool.
But like with Spinal Tap, like the thing about your videos and thing that makes Spinal Tap work is that you are very clearly like in the world that you're making fun of. Like the fact that you can drop Beatos and like make fun of Rhett Schull in an offhand way without making fun of Rhett Schull. Mm-hmm. And stuff. It's the same way the Spinal Tap guys clearly, very clearly know and love all of this music.
Yes.
That, because you need to be able to do Give Me Some Money that well. It's right. Like that's up there with every Ruttles song. Give Me Some Money is on a par easily, like, you know. Mm-hmm. And then again, like we've mentioned every song so far, they're all excellent, and you have to love it to be able to make fun of it like that, I think.
Yeah, you do. And that's why the sequels and what they did after didn't quite hit for me as much, because
I don't know anything about any sequels. Can you guys explain like what's happened since? Because all I know is throughout the years I've heard of like they're coming back, they're gonna do another one or whatever, and I don't know what's actually happened.
They're making one right now. I think it's like McCartney's in it, and it's going to be a who's fucking who. Is it going to be good? I don't know, but
doesn't sound like it. Paul McCartney's not known for his humor these days, is he? Well,
he still has it a little bit. He can still, he could still, every time I've seen him like on a, he usually throws a little bit of something out there when he's not just giving the thumbs up and going, yeah, I suppose. I guess we were the first ones to do it. But I mean, I feel like, he's like, actually, he could probably claim Spinal Tap too. He's like, actually, if you think about it, you know my name, look up the number. We switch a bunch of different genres and we're having a bit of a laugh, aren't we? But I feel like, I hope that it doesn't just turn into a cameo fest, because those are oftentimes not that funny, where it's just like, we've got Paul McCartney, so let's do something with him. And regardless of whether it's funny or not, we're going to use it, you know? But I feel like in 92, I think they did a concert video. And there was a song called Bitch School that wasn't really that good. And there was a couple of, they weren't bad, but they just weren't, they didn't have the, that first album. I mean, Smell the Glove. It's called Smell the Glove. Also, let's not forget about that.
We mustn't.
That's hilarious. It's called Smell the Glove. I mean, you've got a girl on all fours with a dog collar on getting forced to smell a glove.
What's wrong with being sexist? Sexy. No,
it's
sexist.
It's a fun lawn. You did, Andrea. Andre, you've caught up well though for a person that, because I mean you've got them all.
I rewatched most of it today, but it's also something that's quoted a lot in this house, like a lot. So but I mean, like for me, the stuff that sticks with me is more the visual stuff. So the first time I watched it, when both David and Nigel had a cold sore and it was never mentioned on, like, that killed me. I laughed for so long after that I actually missed like tons of jokes, because I was like, what the fuck is this? What is this implying? Like, And then I'm very into like a queer reading of David and Nigel's relationship. Like I'm very into like Janine coming in and like ruining true love between them.
Right.
But,
yeah.
But like that as like a vision, like obviously the Stonehenge thing as a visual joke, it's more, I remember the visuals of it a lot more than I remember like the quotes. I'm not a right. big quote, like I can't fire off quotes, but if I think about the two of them having a cold sore at the same time and it never being explained, I'll fucking piss myself laughing. And equally, if I think about, because we all have an idea of what the Smell the Glove album looks like, and it's going to yes. look different to everybody because they very, very rightly do not show it to us in the film. So I just need to think the word Smell the Glove, and the image that I have in my mind is like the most fucking horrendous, hilarious, like sexist but sexy
right
like album cover. Like it's just so genius. Like Smell the Glove is
Smell the Glove. I that's amazing what you like, just said. I have my own idea. Have my own cover. We've never seen it and I've never really talked to anybody about that, but like I have a very clear glove with the woman, the poor woman, you know, being forced to smell.
Yeah. And I know what she's wearing. I know what the background looks like. Like I know, I like everything about it is so vivid in my head because of her explanation. I can't remember the name of the actress who delivers that so brilliantly. She almost does it all in Brand one Drescher. Breath as well. Yeah. It's like it all comes out in one breath. She's so furious about it.
You've got the cover with a woman, with a girl with a dog collar on all fours being forced to smell a glove.
And what's her accent? What accent is that?
It's like it would be like a New York. She's like a New York, Brooklyn, Manhattan.
It's an accent that I just also happen to find very funny and very charming as well.
Oh, yeah.
There's the bit in The Simpsons where I can't remember what they're doing, but there's dogs in this vat and then one of them tastes it and the other one says like, oh, needs more dog. And I just have to think of that. And so she sounds like that joke as well. So it's all just hilarious to me. But I mean, yeah, Smell the Glove.
It's not even the worst though. I mean, so have you ever seen that Scorpions cover? They were making fun of what was actually happening. I mean, that really was happening. I forget the name of what Scorpions album. It's like, here's the thing. I don't remember, and I'm not telling you to look at this, but I'm just saying that it's
I'm
one
choosing
of those,
to.
Okay. Well, it's one of those things where it's like Google might ask if you really want to see it. It's one of those where it's like sensitive content. Like,
I have one of those like Taschen like coffee table books of like 1,000 like album covers, and it gets real rough in the late 70s, early 80s. It's a lot of Smell the Gloves in there. Like it really is.
Tons. Yeah. If you just like Google Scorpions fucked up album cover, I'm sure it'll pop up.
If it's not for Love Drive, which is the one I'm looking at right now, and there's a Love worse Drive. One than this. Yeah.
Oh, there's probably a worse one. I mean, it's bad. I even forget what exactly it is, but I know that like that's where they got the Smell the Glove thing from, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure of it. Yeah.
And then the immediate like lack of originality with is it Ian? So she says like, oh, the White Album sold well and there was nothing on that cover, and he's like, Black Album.
Right. Just a Black Album. And then that's No More Black. I mean, No More Black is one of the best things that I think humans have ever come up with. You know, it's none. It's how much more black can it get? None.
None.
None more black. It's, you know, I mean, but like David Smell the Glove is here over the PA system while they're practicing Give Me Some Money, GSM, and they're happy. They're happy to be playing that old song. You know, they're on tour and... Yeah, what about GSM? And then they're playing it and they're having a good time. And then Janine shows up, you know, breaks up
Janine,
Nigel and David again from that moment. But it gives us David, Smell the Glove is here. it's Smell the Glove is here. I mean, it's every line. That's what, pardon me. That's what I mean. There really isn't a part that isn't quotable or, you know, amazing
that you're not
and
laughing
even
at.
Like, because I came to the film through reading about it in music magazines, So there's a magazine in history called Select, which would mention all the time as the best film of all time. So, but this was like pre-DVD, so I used to have to keep an eye out on it for TV. So when I finally saw it after like 2 years of hearing, like reading all these quotes, they were even better. Like this, because the delivery of them just is so much better than anything I come up with myself. It really was.
And the fact that they're improvising these things too.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just how locked in they were locked the fuck in. I mean, they just, and I don't know if you've ever seen the bonus footage from the DVD, but some of that's even better than shit that's in the movie.
When they go to the zoo.
Oh, the zoo. And then Bruno Kirby with the, you know, smoking weed, and they've got him singing into a pizza crust. That's incredible. He's like taking off on runway 3. So like even the bonus shit is better than most regular, you know, movies.
Yeah. Cause I think there's like, I mean, not so much right now, but there was about a decade there with like improvised, like, oh, we'll just set the camera up and we'll let Will Ferrell and whoever else just do some improv and then we'll see how we go. And some of those movies are good. A lot of those movies are bad, and a lot of the jokes aren't nearly as good as if they just wrote them down when they thought of them instead of just improvising them on the spot or whatever. But like, I've forgotten to mention my favorite joke in all of Spinal Tap, and it comes in like the first 15 minutes when they're doing that interview outside and they're talking about their first drummer that died. I think Nigel says the police said it was best left unsolved.
Yeah, best left unsolved. It's one of those. Brilliant. It's one of those situations where it's best left unsolved. Like, can you imagine someone saying that? And here's the thing, they stay serious like throughout that. The amount of restraint it takes to not break. While you have somebody that you do not know is going to say it's one of those things that is best left unsolved.
Unsolved.
And they're
when they're reading out the what do you call it? The, like, here's the, it's like, I'm just going to read out some of the reviews to you.
You can't print that.
Of your album.
Christopher Guest does crack. When he says shit sandwich,
it's the, he definitely does. It's the closest, because there's the moment when they all kind of like laugh and look at each other, but they pass it off as them laughing as though it's like, oh, I can't believe they wrote that, but it's the closest they all come to like really fucking corpsing.
This shark sandwich had just two words to review. Shit sandwich. But here's the thing, Shit Sandwich is amazing. And again, to anybody who's listening, like, let's just celebrate Spinal Tap. We hear about it. We've talked about it. It's almost like a full pie. It's almost like if I meet a new band or new people, it's almost like, okay, don't quote Spinal Tap. Everybody's heard the Spinal Tap quotes. But this is like a safe place to just be like, let's just enjoy the genius of this fucking movie. Where there would be no Shit Sandwich. So Shit Sandwich is hilarious. But Shark Sandwich, I would argue, is funnier than Shit Sandwich. Yeah. I mean, they have a sandwich with a shark flying, a shark swimming through it. It's called Shark Sandwich.
I just hadn't thought of that at all. My brain just like skipped to the Shit Sandwich joke every time that I never thought about the fact that they named their album Shark
Sandwich. No, Shark Sandwich.
Interviews to Milo is amazing. Yeah.
Yeah.
It kind of gets to a thing that I think they might have mentioned, that there's two commentaries. There's like an in-character one where they hate Marty DeBurgi, which is really funny. And then there's one that's like the three guys. And they say something really interesting. It's not that they aren't talented, it's that they have no taste whatsoever.
Yes.
That's what they are, clearly very talented, like musicians in character. They just have no taste.
They just have no taste.
Yeah. Yeah, right. And they're followers. They don't have any actual new ideas, and they're except this dead end of 80s metal.
I do think that one of the, if I had to pick my absolute most probably quoted line in real life, just using it day to day, and one thing that I still laugh at when I think about it, is during Jazz Odyssey, when they're at the petting zoo, and you know, this is Derek Smalls on bass. He wrote this and he's playing Jazz Odyssey on the bass. But then they show the crowd and there's one guy that's sitting out in the crowd and he's just holding his thumb down. It's just, he's holding it and like not moving. And it's not even doing the up and down. The guy is just fucking holding the thumb down, like with his hand on his cheek. And I want to meet this guy. And actually, I'm going to write that down to find the thumb holding guy. I swear to God, I am going to try to find this guy.
Pat, if anyone can do it, you can.
Thumbs down guy. I will.
You're the guy for this.
I'll put all my resources. I'll take my people. I'll put my people on it. My people are great people. They're great people. We just bought a Three Doors Down guitar.
So, yes. How'd it go? I was following on Instagram.
In the mail right now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the dude Adam sent it to me. He showed me pictures.
For our listeners, if people don't know, Pat is a major Three Doors Down fan.
Yeah,
has
huge,
been like
huge.
His whole life. Just
big
really
Brad
into
Arnold
them, so
guy.
Got this guitar.
A lot of people don't know Brad Arnold was a singer. He was the drummer. He played on a Kryptonite. He played the drums there. No, they're an absolutely terrible band. But I had to buy a guitar that their lead singer signed so that I could put it next to the guitar I have of the band Train. So now I have a Strat, right? So
yeah. I told you I was a fan.
You got the HSS right out there.
I've got the lore, Pat. Don't worry.
So here's the thing. Where does it stop? Because I feel like, what are there, 8 episodes now? I think that I just have to get a guitar from everybody that I've done an episode on. I think that's the way it's got to go. So I was looking at Lenny Kravitz Flying V's the other day.
Well, I mean...
Yeah.
Affordability-wise...
Well, anything for Shanti touched is going to be... pretty expensive as well.
I'll leave that out. Maybe I'll get so there's the band Desert Tacos band that I talk about a lot that covered Mary Jane's Last Dance, and they're like teenagers somewhere in Arizona or whatever. Maybe I can get a guitar signed by them. So that will be the Danny California guitar. But we've got the Arnold, which I'm gonna call it the Arnold. Arnold's in the mail and I'm really looking forward
That's
to
very exciting.
Yeah, plugging it in. That guitar's gonna fucking blow.
What kind of guitar is it?
It's a Les Paul Junior, which means it only has one pickup. It's an Epiphone, which is it's kind of like their AAA version, their B version of the more affordable stuff. Now Gibsons, even though they're great guitars, they don't stay in tune and they're very expensive. So I can't imagine this guitar actually ever being in tune because Epiphones are notorious for going out. And this was a $180 guitar that we bought off some teenager in Minnesota.
And you paid $180 or they're charging $180 new for it?
I didn't pay. No, I crowdsourced it. So GoFundMe. Ah. So what I did, so the people, the community rallied up in about 15 minutes and raised that money. Also paid for the Hey Soul Squire. So it's kind of like your tax dollars. So people, I put it out there. So if you want to own a part of it, you can. And it's amazing. It's amazing. So I come up with these ridiculous ideas and then everybody jumps on board and we have it. So the Hey Soul Squire was $700. I think we raised that in like 15, 20 minutes. It's unreal. It's stupid.
Yeah.
But it's so important.
Great, though. It is really important.
It's important. Yeah.
It's important.
But the guy giving thumbs down. I mean, it all kind of comes from that. And there's a scene in HCA during the Kravitz Bowl that we were talking about before where it's Eric Clapton, Dexter Holland from The Offspring, and Kenny Aronoff. And there's a guy that's holding the thumbs down in that. Mm-hmm. And it isn't the guy from Spinal Tap, but that's a direct just kind of nod to that, where it's like during their performance, I show one guy just kind of holding it because I don't think that there's really anything funnier than that.
I saw Red Hot Chili Peppers live when I was 18 because that's what everybody did in Ireland when they were 18 in 2002.
Good point. It's a good point, yeah.
But New Order were supporting them.
Okay.
And there was one kid that just stood at the very front of the pit with both middle fingers up for the entire set at New Order.
At New Order.
Massively disrespectful. Peter Hook was like, fuck you.
And New Order is such a cooler band. It's,
yeah.
Right. So it's just kind of like, holy shit. And mm-hmm. I mean, poor Flea. I'll go back to poor Flea. Flea doesn't want yeah. his guys giving New Order the fucking finger. Are you kidding me?
No. Frusciante came out and played, I think, I can't remember which song, but he came out and played guitar on one of the songs with them. And the guy with the fingers was like, fingers yep. down for this one, and then straight back up.
Yeah. Right.
When Frusciante left the stage.
That's dedication.
Yeah.
Yeah. The hold that the Red Hot Chili Peppers had for young Irish people in the early 2000s was immense. It was a lot of it.
It was happening here too.
Yeah.
We're responsible. And I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's your fault.
Yeah. They're not the worst. They are not the worst, like, but they're just what they are. They're not.
I give them Californication as a song. Yeah,
they're fine with that song.
And then after that, I'm like,
I think it's just their fans have taken over in a way where it's just like, Jesus Christ. But also, I said it in my video, I think, you're out of high school, you're still listening to the Red Hot Chili Peppers?
Yeah.
What's going on?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What's going yeah. on over here?
It's a problem.
What are you learning? That's kind of what I, you know.
I know yeah. guys who got tattoos back then of Red Hot Chili Peppers sure. stars. And I was like, what are they doing?
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like they have cover-ups now.
But I mean, I'm happy they are in the world. I really am. I mean that. We need the
Good
Chili Peppers.
Them.
Good for them. I'm glad they're out there. But yeah, obligatory Chai Peps talk.
I mean, yeah, it's actually, it's part of our structure here in Juvenalia. We mm-hmm. do, we would have had this conversation whether you were here or not. So don't worry. Right. Favorite song from the movie, Pat, do you have one?
It's really tough.
Song you most wish you wrote, song you'd most like to perform.
I would love to perform an accurate. I think I've done them all in just like jamming and stuff like that and practice yeah. and everything like that. But I would love to have a full on rock and roll creation at some point. Because yeah. the Look to the Stars part and the Answer is Clear. And then there's that keyboard part, which kind of rules. but I mean, Stonehenge is probably the best song, I think. Stonehenge is an amazing song. I mean, just the changes, you know, it's mm-hmm. like, I mean, it goes from, I don't know if you can hear this, but like, Stonehenge, well, the banshees live and they do live well. The chord structure of that song is really fucking good. and then the, I knew my love, won't you take my hand? Boo-doo-doo-doo-doo, we'll go back in time to that mystic land. Doo-doo-doo-doo-doo. With the teardrops row and the cats meow. I mean, and then it does this whole like diminished kind of beato kind of run, like into the mandolin part.
Yeah. And he nails the mandolin part. Like, there's nothing they're doing.
And these are Irish fucks saying that too.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Should we? Is that offensive to us? Should we have checked that?
It's okay. I could say that. Remember, Pat.
I think it's fine.
It's Pat Finnerty. It's just your relative, Pat Finnerty. That's all it is.
It's our guy. No, I mean, yeah. But the mandolin part is so good. There's nothing they're doing musically that isn't great and creative and like just like a jam. Like every single song is just a great song.
Even America. Do you know the song America? Like that's the one where it's like whatever fuck she is, and it has that you know, baseball and apple pie. It was the B side. It didn't even make Smell the Glove.
But it's so hard for so many people who aren't trying to be funny, who are just trying to be musicians, to write good songs.
Yes.
Like, I think that's important to remember. Like, that's what I had to kind of keep reminding myself when I was first watching it. I was like, oh, songs are really hard to write. I've never written a song. And like, there's a lot of people, I've worked as a music journalist for many years, so I've listened to many, many, many bad songs. And these are people who are like setting out to write a good song, not even trying to be funny, just write a good song. And it's hard. It's really, really hard.
really.
And it's also, I've equally never written a joke. That's hard too.
Yeah.
And doing them both at the same time at that level, it's, to me, it's like, I can't imagine anything more difficult, or like more difficult to like carry off in this way, you know, so convincingly.
I did my time in the parody song Minds in my 20s, and I don't do it now anymore because I was very bad at it. But like, I'm, I can do okay at stand-up comedy, and I can do okay in normal bands, but like, I cannot mix the two. It doesn't work.
No, the twain shall meet.
Yeah, it's there's a something I don't have for it. Yeah.
It's tough. Like I was saying to you before, I mean, it's a slippery slope. You got to watch it. It's a fine line, you know, between sexy and sexist. And it's a fine line between really funny music comedy and the guy from, you know, I fucking need you more tonight. I fucking need you. I mean, and that wasn't that bad, but it's just like, the point is that, like, to do it, I feel like we are going to be hard on somebody. You're assumed guilty before innocent when you step into the world of music comedy. And that's why, like, there's that band Steel Panther that just does hair metal kind of shit. And they probably just talk about, like, you know, lewd stuff, whatever. And, like, Sex Farm. And he comes in and he says, just wanted to let you know, Spinal Tap, that I've been told that Sex Farm is in the charts in Japan. So Sex Farm, working on a sex farm, trying to raise some hard love, getting on my pitchfork, bailing your hay, working on a sex farm, trying to raise, or sniffing around your barn door, bothering your livestock. Bothering your livestock. They know what I need. They know what I need. Like, bothering your livestock. They know what I need. The livestock knows what he needs.
And
right?
I'm bothering them.
Because he's working on a sex farm. But the riff is as funny as bothering your livestock. Because it's like, and then it goes, that's so shitty, and it's so awesome. And then into the sex farm woman, I'll make you hold you down, sex farm woman, can't you see my silo rising high? But I feel like the bothering in your livestock is genius. To me, that's absolute fucking genius. Better than silo written high and all that stuff. The way that they use the word bothering is the funniest thing in that song, which makes Sex Farm really, really an important song. It's Sex Farm.
And I think, like, we have to talk a little bit about the end of the film and the fact that, like, you spend all this time worrying genuinely about these men and about their band and rooting for them and just wanting them to, because, you know, like, the lows of nobody turning up to their signing.
Yeah.
And like, it's quite heartbreaking at times, because like, they're sort of horrible to watch. Like they are kind of awful people, but like, I'm rooting for them so hard.
I found and it quite then, sweet on this rewatch.
Really?
Yeah, like when they're singing the first song they wrote together.
It's
lovely. And then
it's John and Paul.
When they try to be sincere, like when they try to like harmonize at Elvis's grave and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's raw guy, isn't it? Yeah, that's a bit of raw guy. The fun of good guys to dwell. Really makes you think, doesn't it? What? really makes you think. What's that mean?
The end, like they do it, but they do it in Japan, and that's fine, you know. But it's like, I'm so happy that was the ending they decided to give us, because I think they could have really easily pulled the rug out from under them and made their failure part of the joke, or like made their failure the punchline, and they didn't do that, because you do actually start to really care about them by the end of the film, and you really root for them, and you're like, look, if they can't make it in Japan, they can't make it anywhere. And I'm just thinking of like these Japanese fans hearing Sex Farm and being
so
like,
cool.
Fuck yeah.
You see those Japanese fans at the end, and they're just flipping
out.
It's great.
And they're like young and hip and like cool and stylish, like cool young Japanese fans. And you're like, yes, they heard Sex Farm and they were like, these are my new band.
Yeah, because it wasn't Tonight You're Gonna Rock, even though they play Tonight I'm Gonna Rock You Tonight at the end. Sex Farm was what hit the charts in Japan. It got through the language barrier and everything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Maybe because of the language barrier.
Possibly. And then, you know, Mick Shrimpton blows up and ties that all together. And then Joe Mama comes in. I've looked up, I've tried through the years. I mean, I was trying to get in touch with Viv Savage. I think Viv Savage died, but he was amazing. Mm-hmm. I hope he did. If I said that he did. Either him or Mick Shrimpton, one of them is no longer around. But I don't understand why, because they were great drum parts too. I mean, and the keys. I mean, Viv Savage was so cool.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, have a good time all of the time.
He's just the most British man. The most British.
He doesn't even open his
debaucherous British man I've ever seen. That's
how yeah, yeah, yeah.
A good time all the time. That's his motto. Have a good time all of the time. So those two are very important to the band as well.
Yes. You know? Yeah.
Viv Savage, and I mean, Mick Shrimpton. Mick Shrimpton.
I think we should talk a little bit about Janine as well.
Yeah.
Because I think Yoko. She is like, she's such an important part of the story of the film, but I also think she's absolutely hilarious. Like, you've got this woman with the face of Princess Diana. Like, she literally, if she's not playing this role, she's playing Lady Di. Like, she's so beautiful. She's convincing as this sort of like cool English rock and roll like girlfriend who doesn't quite know how to pronounce Dolby, but she's got big ideas for what the band should be wearing on stage, and like the like it's so funny because like she mispronounces Dolby, but she also says Ying and Yang, and the rest of the band go with Ying and Yang as well in like the same conversation. So they're like, they're calling her out for mispronouncing something, and then they're all just doing it together in the next minute. I love that scene. It's like where they first draw the Stonehenge.
Oh,
like,
yeah, and Dobley. Yeah.
Doubly, like, she's is it Blair. It's not Nigel, hello.
What's up,
Nigel's given out about oh, we don't want to be dressed as animals, and she's like, they're not animals, they're like parts of the zodiac. And she's just so her own character in this, and she's Yoko, she's definitely Yoko. Yeah. But she's also kind of just Janine.
And I've never really hated Yoko. She's pissed me off.
Yeah, me neither.
I've thought about that, where it's just like, but John loved her.
Get Back was a big correction for a lot of stuff that I thought about her before, or had heard about her and was questioning. And then I watched Get Back and I was like, she's just sitting there reading a magazine.
Yeah.
Stop doing
anything. She didn't need to always be there reading a magazine.
Yeah, sure.
As a person that's been in bands and that is, you know, it gets weird. It creative stuff, and you're always a little insecure about what you're bringing.
Linda was at least taking pictures.
And she's just sitting there. I kind of get that. Like, you know, maybe a couple days a week, Yoko. But John loved her.
Mm-hmm.
I was much tougher on Janine watching this film than I was on Yoko, because this is Nigel and David. She's getting it between Nigel and David, right? But David loved Janine, and Janine's still there at the end.
Yeah,
she's there.
Mm.
You know, she loves David.
I like that she's still there at the end.
Ian comes back. Yeah, and she's still there. And Ian has a piece of wood with him because it's a good idea to always carry around a big piece of wood. there's no sex and drugs for Ian, but yeah, I mean, Janine is. She's the one that brings the band down, but then also brings them closer together at the end, because they fought through that stuff, right?
Yeah. And what year was this movie made? Like
82,
84. Came out 84, but
84.
82,
Well within the rights to make Janine the butt of a joke at the end of the film, like, or make her leave, or kind of treat her like poorly in terms of the narrative, like blame a lot of stuff on her. And they didn't do that because that would have been really, really easy. But they kept her as like an integral part of the grouping and of like the of the story. And I'm like, yeah, I like that. It's funnier this way. It's nicer this way. And it helps it stand the test of time. You're not looking at Spinal Tap in 2024 now and saying and like leveling anything at it. It's like there's nothing in it that is in poor taste or like it could be made today and it would still make complete sense.
Yes.
There's nothing that's
the only thing it didn't do is launch Janine's career. I mean, where's Janine? What happened to Janine?
Yeah. What is Janine?
Like she ever got another gig. I went to a Spinal Tap Live thing in New York where we watched the movie I forget the venue, I forget what theater it was. We'll watch Spinal Tap with a whole group of huge theater, which was awesome. It was amazing. Mm-hmm. And then Harry and Rob Reiner came out and did like a Q&A afterwards. So they were watching it along and it was part of a film festival. And it was amazing. I get the sense, I know that Harry Shearer enjoys Harry Shearer like a lot. Harry Shearer likes to hear Harry Shearer. And Christopher Guest and Michael McKean were both like, oh, here he fucking goes again. Like Harry was ready to answer every question. Mm-hmm. So I kind of got the sense where it was just like those two were kind of over here and Harry was over there. But they're making a new movie, so.
Remains to be seen. I'm nervous about it.
I love Christopher Guest so much. Might be Wind. It's good. Mm-hmm. It's good. I feel like I love Waiting for Guffman. I love Best in Show. Best in Show is amazing. Great. Waiting for Guffman's amazing. Mighty Wind for me is like, you know, and the last one, I forget what the last one was.
Mascots. Yeah.
Mascots. And I feel like he still has amazing jokes in all of them. But that was such a special. They were all just firing on such high energy and just creatively. Mm-hmm. It was just so amazing. I feel like they were just tapped into it, pun intended, I guess, that it won't be as good, but it'll still be. It's still good to see them. It's always good to see
them. Yeah. I mean, Harry Shearer is 80 now, though. So it's like.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it'll
still be a thing.
It's going to look amazing. Yeah. The outfits, the outfits that they're going to have. Oh, it's going to be incredible.
Yeah.
One thing that actually quite upset me about the film is that I'm turning 40 this year and I've been pretty much okay with it. But they mentioned very early on in the film, they're like, we're nearly 40 and we're still doing this. What are we doing? And I was like, oh shit. Okay. And I'm like looking over at my pedal board. I'm like, should I just sell all this? I don't know. Like this is.
No, don't sell your pedals.
I remember when I was like 28 or 29 and we were playing some terrible show in Chattanooga, Tennessee, driving away. And then I realized that like we're older than the Beatles. Like the Beatles were done. Like I was 29. Yeah. I'm like, wait a second. The Beatles, oh my God, the Beatles were done. They were done.
George Harrison was at like 26 when they broke up, 27. Yeah, something
like that. Like, I'm just like,
really upsetting.
Well, there's a guy in my voice. It's Rob Pollard. He got started at 35. So, you know, and then I turned 35. I was like,
started at 35.
Yeah. Ricky Gervais was 40 when the British Office came out, right? I'm like, okay. So you just got to keep finding your different people that you can.
Yeah.
Right.
Great. Okay. Have we covered Spinal Tap?
We have.
Is there anything we haven't covered that you want to crowbar in at the end?
Let's talk about some Irish bullshit for a second.
Okay.
Love Thin Lizzy. Not as much as you guys. I love them so much. And when I was in Ireland, I was at this dance party. It was at some bar, right? I'll say pub. It was at a pub. Everybody's dancing. And it was great because it was like Kinks and it was Beatles and people were dancing. It was awesome. It was a full dance floor until Dancing in the Moonlight came on. And it was like people came out of the ground.
Yeah.
The ground to dance to this. I've never seen anything like it. It was awesome. Also, RIP Dolores. RIP Sinead.
Yeah.
Mm.
Shane McGowan as well.
Right.
Last year. Yeah.
It's been a tough couple of years.
Tough couple of years for the Irish. But we've been having some international recognition for some bands for like the first time in fucking decades. So we got Lankum, Lankum, kind of Irish traditional folk meets like droney metal stuff. It's very cool. They have two albums.
If there's any kind of Irish in you, you just feel it like in your bones, like there's mist and like a bog filling your skeleton. Yeah. When you listen to them. It's really incredible.
Your ancestral pain will start to like seep out of you. It's very, very powerful stuff.
So it's like Aslan.
Like it's what Aslan is to North Dubliners. Yeah. This is to Irish people.
I love throwing out an Aslan. Don't think I don't have an Aslan.
That was a deep cut. Yeah. No. I've never heard an American say Aslan before. So
yeah.
How about it?
Christy Dignam also passed away last year. Last year as well. Yeah. The treble last year.
Yeah, yeah. Singer, yeah.
So last year was Christy Dignam, Sinead O'Connor, and who's the third person?
Shane
McGowan. And Shane McGowan. You have some new blood coming in.
We've got new blood. Other person who you absolutely have to listen to is CMAT, CMAT. She's got two albums.
CMAT?
Yeah. Listen to the first album first. If you're not convinced by the first song on that first album, I don't know what to tell you. It's one of the best songs I've heard in decades. It's called Nashville.
Yeah.
Nashville.
When she guested on here, she chose the Beatles as her topic as well.
Yeah. When she was our guest on here, she had the Beatles as her topic.
No, she's a good person.
She's a woman of taste.
She's a woman of great taste. And I'm going to listen to Nashville as soon as we get off this. And then I'm going to get my hot tub that's still in my garage.
Oh, yeah, dude.
Excellent. It's
minorly disappointed you didn't do the podcast in the hot tub. Would have been good to see it. It's fine. The next
I was thinking about it, though, but quality. I mean, we're pros here.
For Spinal Tap 2.
Yeah.
Get the hot tub.
If I go down in that thing, if I electrocute myself, I'm happy. I'm calling that a win. At least a draw.
You knew when you signed the papers to accept that thing into your home. Yeah.
It's gonna be a tough day for Kim. Kim comes home from work, goes in, sees me laid out. But I feel like she'd be all right with it. Be like, this is how we wanted it to go.
He died how he lived. In his hospital.
This is a John Entwistle kind of. Yeah.
And then they'll be like, well, check the toxicology. I've been sober for like 20 years. They're like, that's even worse. There's nothing in me. He was actually sober. He just went down in the tub. By the way, I will just say this. I am sober 20 years. Okay. Right around there. I was in Ireland. I went to an AA meeting. It was great. There was five people in there. And you know what the chairperson said? Well, we got a big one today.
I mean,
we got a big one. It was awesome. It was awesome. I think two of them were hammered. I'm like, this is great. Oh, this fucking sound. We got a big one today. It was awesome.
And an American. We have an American in our very exciting day
still
for that meeting.
About that. Yeah.
Oh yeah. There's a picture of you on their wall. They're like, we have this American one.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Well, I want to do I do want to do a tour of Ireland at some point. I want to come out and do some shows and just like hang around for a week. I think, and there's a lot of Irish people that watch my shit. So I'm really and no one's funny. Listen, so it's just like I love being around, and some of my best memories I've had touring have been in Ireland and just meeting people and hanging out and talking about the Beatles and the Kinks and all that shit and singing all the songs and hearing people brag on YouTube, but you love YouTube but you don't like YouTube because
YouTube's weird. It's like we all watch loads of YouTube but we do not talk to each other about it. If I recommend a YouTube video to someone, I have to be like, oh no, it's a good one. Like there's something about YouTube. It's like, it's an intensely private thing. The idea that someone would go onto my YouTube and see my recommended videos is terrifying to me. I'm like, no, that you mustn't.
You should see
mustn't see that.
It's the depths of hell. I mean, my YouTube has turned into with Jason L. Dean, with all of the songs I'm doing.
Oh yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
My algorithm is like it could kill. It could kill somebody by looking at
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I've got so much Pat Monahan and so much Rob Thomas. I mean, for days, just all of my stuff, my recommendations. Spotify might be worse. So yeah. I'm gonna listen to CMAT though when we get out.
Yeah, definitely yeah. listen Ooh. To CMAT. Pat, it's been so lovely to have you. So lovely to meet you. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you, and lovely to meet you guys as well.
Please plug anything you want to plug, or if you don't want to plug anything, that is also perfectly fine.
You know, my bullshit. If you like whatever, Pat Finnerty, YouTube, see what happens, pop it in. We're talking yeah. about shitty songs and Instagram, all that bullshit. You can see it too. Most importantly, it's the Juvenalia podcast. That's what everybody, did I pronounce that the right way?
Yeah, yeah,
exactly. Okay.
Right. Cool. Let's plug your shit.
Let's do that. Andrea, where can people find you?
I'm sort of not anywhere right now.
Okay.
I'm doing a whole social media. It's toxic. I don't like being online. I have an Instagram, but it's not.
It's gross.
Yeah, I don't.
Do you know how much
I'm on Blue Sky. Do you know about Blue Sky?
Oh God.
Another, do you know about that?
Is it ELO at least adjacent? Like it's a social network where you have to like talk about Jeff Lynne?
Right, not, no.
Yeah. It's, we have War of the World Tuesdays where we just talk about War of the Worlds. Yeah.
it's the thing that's come up hopefully to replace Twitter. And I'm like, why am I trying to replace Twitter? I was addicted to that platform for a good 15 years of my life. And here I am on methadone and it's not good, but I mean, hey, I have a Blue Sky. You can follow me there, Andrea Cleary okay. at bluesky.com. There, that's my plug. I'll plug that. Not good.
Yeah, Juvenalia is on those things as well. More importantly, we do have a Patreon where we talk about what we started and finished recently. Where we talk about Pat's video sometimes. We talk about video games. We talk about slow horses a lot.
Yeah.
As well.
Good show.
But that's so thank you to Dean McDonald for artwork. Thank you to Cassie and Tall Tales for having us. And thank you, Pat, for running the show. Thank you. Bye, everybody.
Thanks, Pat.
Thanks for having me.
Bye.